thank you for coming on a Saturday morning.
You're going to knock on wait for Julian who's walking in.
We don't have a tight schedule this morning, as I said, but.
Someone told him it was only half an hour. It's actually an hour.
No, it is.
He knows it's an hour. That's what everybody told him.
Yeah, the best thing has come at the end. And Tenshin Mifuyama from ICMU is going to talk about cosmology and geology of the shamanic.
Okay. Thank you very much. So first of all, I'd like to thank organizers for inviting me to this workshop. I'm having a good time here. And this talk is basically based on this review that I wrote some time ago, and also with these works done with my collaborators, Case Kizumi and Emil Grumchur and Anson Wang. Okay. First of all, I'd like to remind you the power counting arguments. Probably I don't have to do, but just in case. Okay, I can do that with just a scalar field. Okay. Let's consider a scalar field whose time kinetic term is phi dot squared. Okay. Then we can just identify the scaling dimension of phi by considering this scaling. Okay. Let's multiply time by some factor b and the same factor for the spatial coordinates. Then we assume that the scalar field scales like this, where s is number to be determined. Then the by assuming that this action is invariant scaling, we get the scaling dimension. Okay, so that from dt we get 1, from volume 3 and the 2 time derivative we have minus 2, and the 2 phi's gives 2s. They must sum up to 0, then we get minus 1. In other words, the scalar field scales like energy. Okay, now let's consider this kind of interaction phi to n. Then this interaction scales like this when we change energy scale. Okay. So this minus, of course, comes from this minus, and 1 from dt, 3 from volume, and ns from n phi. Okay. And because we know that s is minus 1, this factor including minus is non-positive if and only if n is smaller than or equal to 4. Okay. So this leads to the Arinomer resolvability condition. In other words, when energy goes up, this interaction does not blow up. Then we have a good control of high energy. So, of course, we are interested in gravity, but unfortunately, gravity is highly nonlinear and n is larger than 4. So, the Einstein gravity is nonlinear normalized, unfortunately. So, what to do? Okay. So, basic idea of positivistic gravity is very simple, but kind of dangerous. And so, we just abandon Lorentz symmetry. Okay. Let's explain the idea by scalar field. Okay. So the same time kinetic term, but different scale. Okay, so the space coordinate is multiplied by b, but the time coordinate is multiplied by b to z, where z is number defined by the theory. Okay, then we have the similar condition from the invariance of this action, but instead of 1 from dt, we get z, and from 2 time derivative, we have minus 2z. Then s is this given by this expression. Of course, if z equals 1, we recover minus 1 as before. But what is interesting here is that if z equals 3, then s is 0. So when we change energy scale, the scalar field doesn't scale. Okay. So when we consider phi to n interaction, so this scales like this when we change energy scale. Of course, this minus z comes from this minus z. Okay, and z from dt and 3 from volume and n is from n phi. But when z equals 3, this is 0 for any n. So that for z equals 3, any nonlinear interactions are renormalizable. Actually, this is always negative, okay, for any n. So if gravity behaves like this, then gravity may become renormalizable. This is the idea, very simple. This idea leads to very interesting cosmological implications. For example, we can, by the z to 3 scaling that I explained, this can solve the horizon problem and leads to scale invariant cosmological perturbations, even without inflation. And a new mechanism for generation of prime model magnetic field can be considered based on the similar idea. Also, this theory has higher spatial curvature terms. In order to realize z equals 3 scaling at high energy, then this leads to regular bouncing cosmology. Also, the same higher curvature terms may make the flatness problem a little bit milder. This does not solve the, this itself doesn't solve the flatness problem, but may makes the flatness problem a little bit milder. Also, the absence of local Hamiltonian constraint leads to kind of dark matter as an integration constant. So in this talk, I'd like to explain this idea of solving the horizon problem and generating the scale invariant cosmological perturbations. Then I'd like to explain how to recover GR at low energy. And if you have time, I'd like to explain this idea of dark matter. Okay. So the question now is this. So very simple, where are we from? Okay. Of course, we know the answer. The answer is a primordial fluctuation. So the real answer, real question is how to generate the primordial fluctuation in the early universe. Okay. In this respect, there are two issues, at least. First one is a so-called horizon problem, and the second one is scale invariance. Okay. So the horizon problem is a problem how to explain the hierarchy between the scale of horizon and the correlation length of CMB. So the horizon scale is so small compared to the correlation length, so that we need to explain why the correlation length of CMB is so long compared to the size of the universe at that time. Okay? This is the horizon problem. And the second one is the scale invariance. So this is indicated by observation. So the primordial fluctuation is almost scale invariant. We need to explain this. Okay? So before explaining the new scenario based on the Hodge-Abelson gravity, I'd like to explain the standard scenario. With z equal 1. We consider homogeneous isotropic universe as the background and the perturbations around it. Perturbations is decomposed into a Fourier mode, and each mode is characterized by frequency omega. Okay. When frequency is much higher than the expansion rate of the universe, then that mode just oscillates. Okay. In the opposite case, where frequency is much lower than expansion rate, the Hubble friction is so strong that the mode doesn't oscillate, just freeze up. Okay.
If you want a GG, the derivative with respect to G and the
which one? This one?
Yeah, the red one.
There's red
no,
one?
There's no GG in the denominator. No D.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, this is DG. Oh, thank you. Yeah. So the, we want to generate a primordial fluctuation, but this is nothing but the oscillation followed by freeze out. And this happens if the right-hand side increase compared to the left-hand side. Okay, so that we want to make this ratio to be increasing function of time. Okay, usually if we have z equal one, like in the relativistic theory, we have this kind of dispersion relation. So that by plugging these two here, we get this condition. Namely, the second derivative of the scale factor must be positive, accelerating universe. So the generation of superhorizon fluctuation requires accelerated expansion, namely inflation. This is a standard scenario. Also, the scale invariance requires inflation. Okay, let me see that. Okay. As we have seen, the scaling dimension of the scalar field is the same as energy. So the amplitude of quantum fluctuation of the scalar field is expected to be proportional to energy scale of the system. In this case, Hubble parameter. So that we want to make, in cosmology, the fluctuation at different scales are generated at different time. So the fluctuation generated at early time has more time to expand. So that corresponds to large scale fluctuation. And the fluctuation created at late time doesn't have much time to expand. So that corresponds to shorter scale. They must be the same because our observation tells us, spectrum is scale invariant. So the right-hand side must be constant in time. But if Hubble parameter is constant, because it is defined by this, this means exponential expansion. Okay? So the scale invariance also requires inflation in the standard scenario. But the story is very different in this new theory. Okay? So if we have z equals 3, the story is completely different. Okay? So this condition is the same. We want to have an oscillation followed by freeze out. So we want to make this to be increasing function time. But we have different dispersion relation. Okay? Omega squared is proportional to k to 6 because of z equals 3. Z equals 3, yeah. Then by plugging these two here, we get this condition. instead of the second derivative of A itself, we have A cubed. Namely, the second derivative of the volume of the universe must be positive. This can be satisfied, for example, by a power law expansion with P larger than 1/3. P does not have to be larger than 1. So we don't need inflation to generate super horizon fluctuation. Also, the scale invariance is automatic. Okay? Because the scaling dimension of phi is 0, the amplitude of quantum fluctuation does not depend on energy. So that even if Hubble parameter changes as the universe expands, we still have scale invariance automatically. So, yes?
So I guess this is what I told you before. I'm just wondering. Mm-hmm. So if your scalar field has Lipschitz symmetry, then it decouples from cosmic expansion the same way that photons decouple in the standard effort.
Yeah, so the kind of WKB solution is exact.
It's exact.
Yeah, right.
So
but after that, we should recover z equal 1 while fluctuation is outside the horizon. Then I think it classicalized and still amplitude the same because it is outside the horizon. So that is what I have in mind. So the whole the same story goes to goes with the tensor perturbation. So we still have a scaling invariant perturbation for tensor mode, and amplitude is given by this formula, where M is I don't have this, but M is a scale suppressing the z equals 3 gradient term. Okay. So the story is something like this. So this is the scale factor of the universe, size of the universe, and this is the scale. And so of course the wavelength goes like this as the universe expands. And usually, at low energy, we recover usual story. So the sound horizon, which is defined by h square is equal to omega square. This goes like a usual Hubble horizon. So the wavelength comes into the horizon from outside. But in the early universe, where Hubble parameter is larger than this scale m, the sound horizon, which is defined by the h square equal omega square, it goes like this. And so if p is larger than 1/3, even if p is smaller than 1, we have exit from inside to outside the horizon. So the inside the horizon, the fluctuation oscillates, and the outside the horizon, it stays constant. While outside, there is a transition from z equals 3 to z equals 1, then the fluctuation classicalized, and we can consider, if you like, the curvature scenario to convert the fluctuation scalar field to curvature perturbation. Then after that, the fluctuation comes into the horizon, and we see CMB. Okay? So this is the story, yes.
Sorry, I got to interrupt you.
Yeah.
So if you include the fact that in fact, the modes never freeze in the
Lipschitz mode. It does. I mean, if p is larger than 1/3, then the time defining the kind of WKB solution is finite, and so oscillation stops.
So that's like saying that during inflation, Maxwell field does start oscillating.
Because I think you are talking about how to make the fluctuation classical, right?
But that's
that happened here. I think.
But I guess my only objection here is that sound horizon that you define.
Yeah.
You could define it a different way in terms of basically where WKB breaks down, and you get something very different.
WKB solution, it happened to be exact in this case.
But that's where it breaks down is where Lipschitz scaling breaks down. So
that happened here. Yeah.
Actually it does happen somewhere else. It's mm-hmm. like some other power of H
So of course this transition is not sharp, right? Yes. Yeah. I think this argument is very robust.
I agree with that, but I don't agree with what you call sound horizon because it's kind of arbitrary. You could define as very WKB breaks down.
Okay. Yeah. So if you like, you can just solve the mode function and calculate the power spectrum. That's it. Yeah. Then the result totally agree with this. Yeah. Okay. So the based on the new quantum gravity, we can have a new mechanism of parameter fluctuations, and the horizon problem is solved. And the scale invariance is guaranteed automatically. And if you like, you can consider the the scale, slice, slice scale dependence, and this is calculable based on the scaling of coupling constants. And also, we can calculate the non-Gaussianity, and it predicts in general predicts the large non-Gaussian, something like FNL of order 100. So this can be detectable in the future. Okay, so let's go on to the next subject, which is GR recovery, how to realize GR limit. Okay, so in order to do that, I have to explain the actions of the gravity and so on. So let's go back to the theory. Okay, so the basic quantities in this theory is Laplace function, shift vector, and spatial metric. Okay, so we can, at least at low energy, it makes sense to construct the alien metric, but the basic quantities are these three, not the four-dimensional metric. And having the basic quantity, we should specify the fundamental symmetry. In this case, correlation preserving diffeomorphism. Okay, so this is nothing but the spatial diffeo plus space independent time representation. Okay. Of course, we want to realize anisotropic scaling with d equals 3 at high energy. So d equals 3 here or higher. Okay. But for simplicity, I would like to consider d equals 3. Okay. And because of this symmetry, we can use these ingredients in the action, of course, NDT and the volume, spatial volume and the metric and the covariant derivative and the curvature. But we don't have to use the Riemann curvature because Y is zero in 3D. Of course, we want to include the time derivative of GIJ because we want to make this to be dynamical. But GIJ dot itself is not covariant under this diffeo, so we need to use the extrinsic curvature. So this represents how constant time surface is embedded in four dimension. So this is covariant. Okay. So the time kinetic term can be obtained by squaring this quantity, but there are two combinations, Kij, Kij, and K squared. And this coefficient is arbitrary and subject to running under algebra flow. Okay. In GR, of course, we have lambda equal 1. Also, we want to have z equals 3 potential terms in order to realize z equals 3 scaling. So namely, we want to include 6 spatial derivatives. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 combinations. There's another combination, but this is written in terms of other terms after doing integration by parts. So we have just, at high energy, we have 5 plus 2, 7 terms, okay? That's all. At low energy, we want to include the terms with lower spatial derivative terms. And so, for example, z equals 2 terms consists of 2. And just this corresponds to Einstein action and the cosmology constant. Okay? So in total, we have 11 terms, I think, if we demand the spatial parity. Okay? That's all. So at high energy, we can realize z equals 3. And if this theory is renormalizable, then the terms a bit higher dimension, more term, I mean, for example, z equals 4 terms are not generated by a quantum correction. So 11 terms are all we have. Okay? So z equals 3 can be realized, and we have power counting renormalizability. Okay? At low energy, those terms, I mean, terms with 6 special derivative terms and those term, this term is not important. What is important at low energy is these two. And these two. So the action at low energy is given by this, just 4 terms. And this looks like an Einstein-Hilbert action if lambda is 1. So the we expect that the GR may be recovered if lambda goes to 1 at low energy. In other words, if lambda equals 1 is an IR fixed point. Okay. However, I have to point out that the renormalizability beyond power counting argument has not been proved. And RG flow has not yet been investigated. So we don't know whether lambda really goes to 1. But I think lambda equal 1 is really, really a special point. So there is a good chance that the lambda equal 1 is maybe an IR fixed point. So I assume this hereafter. Okay.
Yes? Maybe it's worth pointing out at this stage that even though the action looks like GR,
yes,
since the gauge symmetries are.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
One still needs to address what happens to this.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I will. Yes. That's right. Yeah. So now I'd like to explain the project 3D condition. Yes.
There was no pi g yet, and
pi g dot. Pi.
They make an action, it's like a Hamiltonian.
You mean the kij dot, for example.
That's part of the Hamiltonian.
No.
Pi g, like pq dot minus Hamiltonian. Where's your pq dot?
It's in the kk term.
So this is
the
action, yes.
If you do the Legendre transformation to phase space, the kk term has a pi q dot.
So the until now, I secretly here. I mean, so I wrote here secretly that n is a function of time. Okay, Lux is a function of time. So the this is a so-called projectivity condition. And so even I mean, actually the I will show you later that we don't recover GR actually, but we can recover GR plus dark matter. Okay, so I will explain this later. But anyway, so that even if the action looks like a GR, but n is restricted to be a function of time, not a function of time and space. Okay. So this is a big difference. And this condition called projectivity condition stems from the Fourier preserving diffeo. Okay, this is an infinitesimal version of Fourier preserving diffeo. And let's forget about these two. Let's consider this. Okay. So if n is a function of time, this is zero. And this is a function of time, this is a function of time. So delta n is also a function of time. So a space independent n cannot be transformed to space dependent n. So it's consistent to set n to be function of time. Also, n is gauge degree of freedom associated with a space independent time parameterization. So it's really natural to restrict n to be space independent. As a result, the Hamiltonian constraint So this is the projectivity condition. So as a result, the Hamiltonian constraint, which is equation motion for n, is not local equation, but the equation integrated over whole space. Okay. So by varying the action with respect to function time, we get an equation which is integrated over whole space. We don't have a local Hamiltonian constraint. This leads to a very interesting cosmological implication, which I will explain later. So that there are several versions of Hoxha-Brisk gravity. So that there are versions with or without the projectivity condition. The original proposal by Peter was with the projectivity condition, namely the Laplace function is function of time only. Okay. If we naively extend to non-projectable case, then the theory would be inconsistent, as many people, including Heno, showed. But by including the derivative of n, we can cure the non-projectable case. Okay. So this is done by these people. Also, we can extend the theory by including a new symmetry. This was part of the subject by Peter on the first day of this workshop. But in this talk, I'd like to consider the simplest scenario, namely the theory with projectable condition without U1 extension. Okay.
So the paper by Hanau,
yes.
It says that the theory is either inconsistent or identical to GR. Right?
No.
If you make bad assumptions, then the theory is inconsistent. That's what the paper concludes.
Yeah.
But
there are two versions. Either you have the projectable version, which has already been discussed. If you have the non-projectable version,
yeah.
You relax the projectability condition. Then you have to write down the most generic action compatible with symmetries. If you leave out artificially some terms like anodic, and not pass to any that.
But again, I mean, even if
on leaving some terms out, and then he complains that the
yeah.
Theory is
no, but
yeah,
even
exactly,
his
yeah.
conclusion is not that the theory is inconsistent. It's just that it's either inconsistent or the same as GR.
I mean, higher derivative terms like.
Know that GR is consistent.
But okay, so
now we discussed that and. He says if you leave out some of the terms that are not allowed by symmetry, you get inconsistency.
But I'm trying to be very careful here. So there are two ways to satisfy the secondary constraint. One is to say that Laplace is zero, which is the nonsensical theory, and another is to say that the momentum of the trace of metric, the pi or k, is zero.
But that only works for GR.
Well, so that if that's the case, in asymptotic Lefebvre space time, that's identical to GR, and that's the conclusion that they got. There are two ways to satisfy it. One is nonsensical, and the other is identical.
Yeah, but in that but case, how do we realize equals 3?
The calculations are wrong, right?
But the assumption is leaving out that gradient from log n.
Yeah,
right?
Okay, okay. So
but
anyway, I'll talk about projectable case.
So
this issue doesn't arise.
I shouldn't interrupt you too much. But I just want to say that I think, and many other people in this room believe that, even if you leave out that term, you can have a consistent theory. And I've done calculations, predicted everything for it. So even if without log a grand log n, you can have
But anyway, these terms are generated by quantum correction, so we cannot ignore.
But
yeah.
I mean, somebody needs to prove that. I think there is a symmetry that protects you from having those terms. But
that's four dimensional diffeo. So we go back to GR.
No, that's a different symmetry.
Okay. Anyway, yeah. Anyway, let's go.
If you
go
all this, and if you postulate only for issue presenting homomorphisms, that's your entire symmetry. If you pull all these terms now, then I think Poisson showed that the
yeah, but I'm saying that you could also
okay. Let's leave the discussion.
I think it's not furnished.
Yeah. Okay. So the I mean, with the projectivity condition, you might worry about the black hole and so on, because usually the Newton potential is fluctuation of the zero component of metric, and here zero component is a function of time only. So in static case, this is just for example one. Okay. But there is no worry. There is a coordinate called PG coordinate for Schwarzschild black hole. Here n is exactly one. Also, we can employ the Gaussian normal coordinate. For example, for Schwarzschild black hole, coordinate called the Lemaître reference frame has this structure. And for Kerr black hole, we have a so-called Dolan coordinate. So we can have those black holes in this theory. Okay. No problem. So the real question is
understand the statement.
Yeah.
What is the statement? Is this Schwarzschild solution of this theory or not?
Yeah, it is. Even if we have a higher curvature terms, this is if lambda equals one. Yeah.
Okay, then so the statement is when lambda equals one is the solution, but if lambda is not equal to one, is not the solution?
This is the question. Yeah. So the real question is whether this limit is continuous or not. Yeah. Thank you for asking, yeah. So this is the question that I would like to ask now. This is a very important question. Because the number of degrees of freedom is different for lambda equal 1 and lambda not 1, okay? So that if lambda is not 1, and from this argument, we can see that the number of degrees of freedom is 3, not 2. So that on top of 2 degrees of freedom for tensor graviton, we have scalar graviton. So the question is, what happens to this guy when lambda goes to 1? This is the question that I would like to ask. Also, the lambda should go to 1 from phenomenological reason. So we can calculate the kinetic term for the scalar graviton, and sine is determined by this combination. Okay. So this must be positive in order to avoid ghost. So the lambda must be either larger than 1 or smaller than 1/3. Okay. Of course, we want to realize GR at low energy, so it's better to have a lambda larger than 1 so that it can approach to 1 at low energy. Okay. Then in this case, we can also calculate the dispersion relation for the scalar graviton in flat background. Then it's given by this. I mean, I ignore the higher derivative terms. At low energy, this dominates. And what happens is that the sound field square is negative if this is positive. So that there is a IR instability in linear level. Okay. But in the universe there are some instability which is good one. So called Jeans instability. Structure in our universe is made by Jeans instability. Unless we have Jeans instability, we don't have galaxies. We don't have cluster of galaxies. We cannot be here. Okay, so we need gene instability, and this instability can be slower than this good instability if the time scale of this guy is longer than the time scale of gene instability. Okay. Also, in the expanding universe, if the Hubble parameter, I mean inverse of Hubble parameter, in other words, the time scale of expansion of the universe is shorter than the instability time scale. Then there is no instability. We can show this explicitly by analyzing the perturbation in expanding universe. So the, this kind of instability does not show up if this condition is satisfied. Okay. Essentially, this says that the lambda must be very, very close to 1 at low energy. And this, is, this should be considered as a phenomenological constraint on properties of RG flow. Because the left-hand side depends on lambda, which is subject to running and the RG flow. And the right-hand side is essentially the environment and the scale. Okay. So the, as we change the length scale and also the environment, the lambda is expected to be run, expected to run. So the, this is conditioned on the properties of RG flow. Of course, we don't know how I mean these parameters run under RG flow. But so at this moment, this is just a phenomenological constraint.
So suppose you compute the RG flow.
Yes.
And you find that yes. This is not satisfied. What
yes.
would be your conclusion?
Then the, I think we have an inhomogeneous phase. So the instability grows and we end up with the inhomogeneous phase. And if the length scale of this inhomogeneous phase is much shorter than the say 0.1 millimeter, 0.01 millimeter, then we don't care. What we care is how perturbation propagates in this inhomogeneous background. But this is very difficult to analyze.
The modulated phases
yeah.
that I was mentioning.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think that is very important. I mean, even if this condition is satisfied by RG flow, it's very important to analyze this kind of inhomogeneous phase, I mean, and modulated phase, and properties of propagation of perturbation. Because, I mean, so the, I think that the effective coupling constant depends on the length in this case. Because if we consider, interaction between two particles at very distant, long distance, then graviton propagates, in a very long, and in this region there are many structures. So the effective coupling constant changes depending on the length scale, even classically. So this is a very important subject, but this is very, very difficult to analyze. So far, I don't know what happened. Yes?
There's actually an interesting other possibility one can also explore, which is if you are facing these modulated phases, then you may want to start in 4+1 dimensions. And then you have the modulation on the fifth dimension of space-time.
Mm-hmm.
It will still stay four-dimensional.
Yeah.
Stripes of the modulation.
Yes. You have a question?
Yeah, so I have kind of just a dumb question because I'm confused. I thought that in order for the power counting arguments were for lambda equals 1/3 for the UV finiteness. So
No. I mean, for any value of lambda, we have an anisotropic scaling with z equals 3. Yeah. Right. At high energy. This is at low energy. But
the special thing that happens at lambda equal to 1/3 is that you can classically become locally anisotropically conformed.
Yeah.
That would be an anomalous symmetry anyway, so you want to generically consider that not to be a part of the big symmetry, and then it's going back to the end.
Right.
Okay. Thanks.
Capital M here is the
capital
coupling, your capital M.
Capital M, yes.
Yeah, that's the related to the coupling constant for the hydrogen.
That's right, yeah. So, for example, the coefficient this guy is suppressed by M to
okay.
4, yeah.
So is there anything you can say about that value?
Naively, it's similar, of order of Planck scale, but the Planck scale is derived quantity in this theory,
okay.
So that we need to solve the RG flow in order to answer your question.
Yeah.
But naively, it's probably the order of Planck scale, but I don't know.
So then it's...
But it could be as low as milli-electron volt. We don't really know
We need to solve the RG flow.
Right, that's what I was wondering about, because I would think that this kind of inhomogeneity would be quite easily observable if it's at a scale of micron.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
So,
yeah. But that, for a moment, I'm assuming this. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, for
so you
for,
have them
yeah.
pretty big.
Yeah.
Or
there are several different scales in fact, because you have all these long other permissions, I think five
yeah.
of them in this case, and each of them comes with a separate scale
mm-hmm.
principle.
Right, right.
There
are yeah.
also scales that are
right.
essentially analogically
yes.
applied.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So the what this says is essentially that the lambda must be close to 1 at low energy. Then what happens? actually the naive perturbation breaks down when lambda goes to 1. Okay, so let's consider the gauge where n is 1, because n is anyway function of time, so we can choose time coordinate so that n is 1. Okay, and we let's just decompose the shift vector into longitudinal part and the transverse part. This is always possible, and we can choose the so-called transverse gauge so that we have just curvature perturbation and gravitational wave, non-linear gravitational wave. So this is a transverse terrestrial. Okay. Then let's suppose that these perturbations are small. Yeah, Q is some small number for the first order in perturbation. But let's suppose that B could be as large as order one. Okay. Naive perturbation means that B is small, I mean order Q, but let's not assume it. Okay. Also the NI. So the shift vector is assumed to be order one here. Could be small, but could be large. Okay. Then momentum constraint say that implies this relation. Okay. B, namely the scalar part of the shift vector is related to the curvature perturbation, and the coefficient is given by this. This is order one, and if lambda is not close to one, this is order one plus small quantity. So that if perturbation is smaller than lambda minus one, then we can expand this factor with respect to Q, like H or theta. Then the perturbative expansion makes sense. So this is the perturbative regime, but this breaks down when lambda goes to one. Okay. So of course we want to realize GR at low energy, so lambda, we should send lambda to one. Then we are in the non-perturbative regime, where this is smaller than this. So we cannot expand this, okay? So the naive perturbation breaks down. But if we can solve this constraint equation exactly without doing perturbation, after that, we can set H and theta to be small, okay? So this is very similar to what happens in massive gravity. This is called Weinstein mechanism, okay? So the in massive gravity, linearized analysis results in this famous VDBZ discontinuity. So the massless limit does not agree with the massless theory, okay? If we trust the linear perturbation. However, perturbative expansion completely breaks down in this limit and cannot be trusted, okay? So if we perform non-perturbative analysis, then we can show that GR is recovered and the massless limit is complete, is continuous, okay? But there is subtlety. The continuity is not uniform with respect to distance. So for example, one over R expansion does not work in the massive gravity. However, Weinstein radius, so there is a radius called Weinstein radius. Within this radius, we can recover GR. Outside this radius, we don't recover GR. And this radius can be pushed to infinity in the massless limit. For example, this can be outside the size of the solar system or even outside the horizon. So that in the massless limit, we can recover GR in massive gravity. So I expect the similar thing happens in this theory. Okay. So, but as I said, the perturbation breaks down. So we have to do non-perturbative analysis. It's in general difficult. But for simple case, for example, spherically symmetric static case, we can do that. Okay. So let me explain this. In general, because of this symmetry, we can set n equal 1. This is always possible without any symmetry. But with this symmetry, we can set the shift vector in this form and the 3 metric in this form. Okay. Then for technical reason, I defined the new variables capital R out of the beta, which is shift, and R, which is a part of 3-dimensional metric. Then we have this equation. Okay. What is important is that there are two important things. One is we have this structure. As I explained before, we have lambda minus one here, and also perturbation. Beta square is essentially perturbation of, how to say, this is a Newton potential, okay? Beta square is Newton potential. So this is small, if we consider small fluctuation around Minkowski background. So that if lambda is very, very close to one, then perturbation breaks down, as I explained before. But with this symmetry, we can do exact analysis. So let's do that. Okay. Also, second point is that there are two branches for this equation, because this is algebraic equation for beta prime over beta. Okay. So we have two solutions. Actually, plus branch does not recover GR, but minus branch does. Okay. In this limit. If we do that, if we choose minus branch and do numerical calculations, I mean, just numerically integrate these ordinary differential equation, we can show that the GR is recovered when lambda is close to 1. Okay.
You said that these are static solutions, but
yes.
It includes the Pavlovian coordinate Schwarzschild, and in that sense, it's probably more accurate to say it's stationary.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, yeah. And yeah.
What's your interpretation of the other branch?
Other branch, I don't know. Yeah. So it doesn't connect to GR. Yes, but I don't know honestly. But in dynamical situation, I think So of course, the real question is how we can realize this branch, starting from the totally general dynamical situation. But I think if we start from the regular initial condition and envelope, then I hope that this branch is realized. But we have to see, numerically, probably.
Is there any singularity in the other branch at all?
At the center, actually, if we use this solution, R equals zero is a singularity. But near the singularity, three curvature is always zero. So that there is no divergence in three curvature, but if three curvature diverges. So that I expect to have a quantum correction, so that lambda should run from one near the singularity, and it would be singularity. So then if lambda is not one, this is not solution. And my guess is that near the would be singularity, there should be a dynamical region. And there is some the would be caustics and bounce and so on, but that this is just a speculation. But at least I can say that this is not a solution at R equals zero, if we take into account the running of lambda.
But I was asking if the other branch has more sick here than
plus. I have no idea. Yeah. Okay. So I have to look at I have to integrate the equation motion numerically and see what happens. Yeah. Anyway, so let me explain again the two regimes. Okay, so this equation, okay, so this expression has this structure. As I said, beta squared is perturbation. And we want to send lambda to 1. Okay. If the perturbation is small enough, even compared to lambda minus 1, we are in the perturbative regime, and 1 over R expansion makes sense. But what we want to do is to recover GR, so the lambda should be very close to 1. Then we are in this regime, where this is a non-perturbative regime. This is responsible for GR, okay? Recovery of GR. But we cannot do the perturbative expansion. We should do non-perturbative analysis, which is what I did. Okay. So and then there is a boundary defined by this equation. This is the analog of Weinstein radius. So within this radius, we have GR. Outside this radius, we have something defined from GR. But what is important is that by sending lambda to 1, this radius diverges. So that this region can cover the region inside the solar system or even the current horizon. Okay. So we can recover GR if lambda is very, very close to 1. This is my message.
So
yes.
You're saying if lambda is exactly 1, then you have exactly GR.
I don't know. I mean, so lambda cannot be exactly 1, of course, because it is subject to running. And so my question is, So my question is whether lambda equal 1 limit is continuous or not. If lambda equal exactly 1, at low energy, we have something like GR. But the a priori, we didn't know whether the limit agrees with the mass, lambda equal 1 theory. That was the question.
You say it's a continuous limit, but you
have to include that's right. Yes.
Do you have any idea, at least in principle, of how to give a proof of this limit beyond the spherically symmetric static?
Yes, so I have some evidence.
This is a problem, as far as I know, even with the ordinary Weinstein mechanism in massive gravity.
Yeah.
There's this very, very special narrow.
That's right, that's right. Yeah, I will show you another example later.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't have a general proof. But I think my gut feeling is that how to say the physics must be continuous whenever the parameter goes to some value, and if we properly define the observable, that's my gut feeling. But there is no proof.
If it's the right physics, it must be.
Yeah.
No, if it's the right physics, it just has to be right at the values of the parameters that. Are the right values.
Right.
I guess you're much more of an experimentalist than that.
Yeah.
So
what happens to the scalar mode?
This is exactly the transparency for you. I mean, so the question is what happens to this this scalar graviton? So my view is that this becomes dark matter. Okay. So let me explain. So this is a very naive argument, but if I have time, I can give you more solid arguments later. So if we calculate the action for the scalar graviton at the nonlinear level, the structure is like this. So we have time kinetic term in this gauge. So the theta dot square and lambda minus 1 is in the denominator. Okay. So we have nonlinear corrections to this term. Okay. So the leading term is of this form. Okay. So theta is always divided by lambda minus 1. And this can include the square of this and cubic of this and so on. And anyway, when lambda goes to 1, coefficient diverges, okay? And divergence becomes worse and worse as we go to higher order, right? But this divergence always happens with two time derivatives, okay? There is no lambda dependence in the potential terms. Absolutely not, okay? So so if we can somehow sum up this infinite number of terms and canonically normalize this scalar graviton, then in the limit where lambda goes to 1, we just have time kinetic term. This disappears. Lambda minus 1 goes to numerator after redefining the field. Then we just have a time kinetic term. This looks like a minimally coupled free scalar field with some speed 0. This is nothing but dark matter. Okay. So that this is this is another example of analog of Weinstein mechanism. So I consider the cosmology, and in order to analyze the nonlinear perturbation, I employed the so-called gradient expansion. Gradient expansion is a technique to analyze totally nonlinear perturbation for large-scale fluctuation, perturbation. Okay? So I consider the flat Friedmann background with a scalar field, okay, as a matter, and did a gradient expansion up to any order. I obtained explicit solutions up to at any order, and showed that these solutions are regular and continuous in this limit at any order. Okay. So this explicitly shows that GR plus dark matter plus scalar field, which is this one, is recovered in this limit. Okay. So this is another example of Weinstein mechanism.
Why did you have to include the scalar matter?
Yeah, so initially in the first paper we did without scalar field, but there is a possibility that coupling to matter may blow up when lambda goes to 1. So that in order to make sure that we included the scalar field, and still the coupling, including the coupling between gravity and matter, the limit is continuous. Yeah. That's what we showed.
What's the mass of your dark matter?
So it's massless, but non-relativistic. I will explain later, but
okay.
If I have time. Yeah.
Okay. And in the previous slide, you told us there is at least naively discontinuity annotates. Hard to see what's going to happen. Now, in the slide you just had, set this.
Yeah, this is a totally non-linear analysis. So if we do a linear perturbation, or any order perturbation, then perturbation breaks down, so we cannot trust it. But this is a completely nonlinear analysis. So that we do a gradient expansion, which is essentially the derivative expansion in respect to space, not to time.
Mm-hmm.
Time is kept, but the spatial derivative is expanded. And but amplitude is arbitrary. So this is a so-called gradient expansion method. And so in this method, we can treat the nonlinear perturbation. And then
what happens to the scalar mode in this method?
Dark matter. It appears as dark matter. Yeah. So that we can compare the result. We have the explicit solution and compare this this limit of the solution in each order and compare with the corresponding solutions in GR plus dark matter plus scalar field. They agree at each order.
And there are no factors from another lambda.
No, nothing.
In the previous slide, you absorb them by canonically normalizing.
Yeah.
There's no such step.
No. Because essentially because I'm looking at the observable. Theta itself is not observable. We observe the metric perturbation and the matter perturbation and spectrum of them. Yeah. And they agree with the GR corresponding quantity. Anyway, so let me summarize, and if I have time, I'll explain more about the dark matter thing. Okay. So the Hodge-Lewis gravity is power countingly normalizable and can be a candidate theory of quantum gravity. And Z equals 3 scaling solves the horizon problem and can generate the scaling invariant perturbation, even without inflation. And in the limit where lambda goes to 1, this theory exhibits the so-called the analog of Weinstein effect. And the GR plus dark matter is recovered non-perturbatively, at least in some simple cases. Example includes the spherical symmetric static vacuum configurations and superhorizon cosmological perturbation, nonlinear perturbation. And in this limit, Schwarzschild black hole is an exact solution, and the large Hubble black hole is an approximate solution, large compared to the quantum gravity scale, of course. And scalar graviton becomes dark matter, and Hodge-Lewis gravity at low energy can mimic GR plus dark matter. Okay. So how many minutes do I have?
Well, time is up now, but we have a discussion session after the break, and we can do the dark matter.
Okay. Yes. Okay, thank you.